From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in...
Extra, extra.
Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games. In this episode, your nice hosts bring you a Nice Games Bulletin, where we discuss the latest news from the broader world of video games, at least as latest as we are able. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. I'm glad you remembered to do that.
It's important.
Yep. Welcome to the news.
Mm-hmm. Should we just get into it?
Let's do it.
Let's start with the new releases.
Yeah.
So I guess as of yesterday of this recording, but it has been out a while for you, Super Mario Maker 2 came out.
Yeah.
My brother played it last night. He seemed to have a really good time with it. Mm-hmm. He kept being amazed at all the new things they added to this game.
Yeah.
Compared to the first one. So look forward to that, or you already have played it. So,
you know, it came out from where we're sitting yesterday.
Right. Yeah.
And I've already played all of it.
Oh, wow. So,
okay. What?
So there's a campaign mode, a story mode,
yeah, with
100 or 120 new levels.
Yeah.
I just tore through all of it.
Wow. Okay.
Because I wanted to do it, like, I wanted to do all of that so that I can do the creation stuff afterwards.
Oh, sure.
I remember the first Mario Maker, I kind of didn't know where to start.
Yeah.
And so I kind of just sampled bits of it, and it took me a while to like get into it, mm-hmm, because I didn't really know what to do when I picked it up. I was like, should I play other people's courses? Should I do the, it had a limited sort of single player mode.
Yeah.
Or should I just start making? And it didn't guide me so much. And
okay,
so this time, like, I'm just going to pick one chunk of it, do all of that, be done with it forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then do the other thing. And so that's what I did yesterday.
Ah, okay.
And so I played all that. And it was fun, but I had some trouble. Like, a lot of the level design, mm-hmm, these are all, there's 100 plus Nintendo design levels. A lot of them are super clever and interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of them introduced to these new concepts that are in this game, the new power-ups and stuff that are unique to this one, that aren't from past Mario games.
Right, yeah.
Really fun, but a lot of times the levels are kind of, they're janky in places.
Oh.
And I was really disappointed, in fact. And I was like, it's definitely not as polished as an experience as a normal Mario game,
sure,
but that's sort of by design, right?
Right, yeah.
The levels are smaller. There's less less time just to sort of bounce around. It's more like each level is a very focused version of its own idea.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple places where you walk forward and are just killed instantly by a falling spiny or something.
Oh.
Or like a jump that is obviously not, could have used a couple more iterations.
Sure.
And I feel like that's something that you see a lot in Mario Maker levels, mm-hmm, or as we as game designers in our own work. And when we play test, we're like, oh, right, I didn't. And so I was actually kind of disappointed which was sort of a weird feeling to have,
yeah,
playing this game I've been anticipating all year.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I don't know.
Is it? Okay. Well, I guess I haven't played through the campaign, so I don't know. But, mm-hmm, like, maybe they were trying to give players an impression of, like, simple levels that, mm-hmm, like, previous games that are like this, like, what's the game?
Little Big Planet.
Yes, like Little Big Planet. Previous games like that, I felt like their like story mode and stuff was just introductions into what you could do with the game.
Yeah.
So they never really felt like fully fleshed, solid ideas. They all just felt like an amalgamations of a bunch of different things that you could do with,
mm-hmm,
it. And that's kind of how I imagined the campaign mode in Super Mario Maker to feel like.
It's funny you describe it in that way, because, mm-hmm, Little Big Planet, which I've played all those games.
Yeah.
Their campaign mode is really focused on a new mechanic that it really drills into you for a couple of levels.
Yeah.
And then it moves on to the next sort of element. And it takes its time making sure you got it.
Okay.
Before moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Maker 2 does not do that at all.
Oh.
Every level is completely different from the previous one.
Ah, okay.
And not just in terms of content, but in terms of difficulty.
Oh.
You'll have a really easy one followed by just an incredibly hard one. There's not really a problem with that exactly, especially if you've played a lot of Mario games. Like, it's an easy one is just as enjoyable as a difficult one.
Sure.
But because everyone is so different from the last, you don't get that sense of like of rising action or progress.
Yeah.
And that's okay, mm-hmm, because the levels are basically content for the overworld area where you're rebuilding Peach's castle.
Yeah.
And so every level you get, the coins you collect you use to sort of buy, you know, build up the castle.
Oh.
And that's a really good mechanic because finally you care about coins in a Mario game.
Uh-huh.
It's actually, it was really interesting because I'm playing through a level. I want to get every coin, which is not a feeling I ever have in a Mario game, like ever.
Yeah.
And so it's, I was a dozen or two dozen in and levels in, and I was thinking like, oh, I'm really playing this differently. Why? I'm like, oh, right. Because it actually matters in a strange way.
Uh-huh.
So that I did find sort of interesting, but unlike Little Big Planet, when it introduced a new concept, it introduced it right away and then you never see it again.
Yeah.
Which is sort of even more than a lot of times a Mario idea will be sort of.
Yeah. I was going to say that sounds like Mario to me.
there's an example is, there's a thing called the Koopa car, which is like a little vehicle that a Koopa Troopa drives, and you knock them out, and then you have a car.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. You can make fun, like Auto Mario games are going to be great for this.
Yeah.
It is in one of these levels.
In
the 100 plus that ship with it, which is really kind of crazy because it's in a lot of the trailers.
Yeah. Huh.
You know?
That's something.
But of course, you know, you can make many more levels with this item. So it's not like it's, you know, actually limited.
Yeah. But it's weird that they introduced it, but that didn't really explore it very far for players to maybe get inspired from.
Yeah. And maybe they didn't have to because the Mario Maker community is like was ready with all of its existing ideas and all the new ones it was coming up with. So it's not necessary exactly.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's the whole thing. Like the reason they didn't spend as much time polishing all these is like, well, like some people are going to play this, but a lot of people are just going to go jump it right into making a bunch of crazier stuff than we can come up with. So
yeah.
And maybe it's like a sampler of like, okay, here's a bunch of levels. Some of them we will encounter will be very janky. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. Maybe I'm being very, very picky about it.
You're like expecting that Nintendo seal of quality on all of them.
Yeah. Well, but also, doing level design, like I'm very attuned to like this idea of, you know, the thing that's half a screen ahead of you, like what information does it tell you?
Yeah.
And like, this break where I don't need to panic anymore. Is that because I've been holding down the button too long and I need a physical break for my hands? Or is it because I need a moment to see what's coming up ahead of me? Like all of those things. And I felt like there were a lot of levels where there wasn't as much of that thought put into it. And sure. But maybe I am being too picky. I don't know. But it was super fun. Like, I do recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, cool.
And I'm really looking forward to playing a lot of the levels other people have made. And I'm looking forward to fantasizing about having time to make my own levels and then not doing that.
Yes.
So, we'll see.
Yes. My favorite thing to do in Super Mario Maker was to make, like, boss fights.
Yeah. There's going to... That's the new tools that are available in this game, including clear conditions.
Yeah.
Is going to make designing boss fights in this game a lot more enjoyable and more varied and more interesting. You're going to see a ton of these things. It's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah.
I do love the sort of single, the sort of slow-paced puzzle levels.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those were very good in the campaign, partly because it didn't rely on like a lot of that sort of precision platformy design stuff.
Right.
It could be janky and still work 100%.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to see what other people come up with, like the wacky ways they make you figure stuff out with even more of the tools that it gives you.
Yeah, cool. Another game that is coming out soon. Oh, it's out now. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, which is that Kickstarter game that is supposed to be like Castlevania. Mm-hmm. I played it at E3, and I thought it was okay. But I don't think I'm a huge Castlevania fan, so maybe that's why it probably wasn't for me.
Uh-huh.
I've heard that like if you're really into Castlevania games, you'll really like this game.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's when you say it's Castlevania, like, oh, right. The title is basically exactly the same. It looks like a parody title.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, if you like those kinds of games, go for it.
I've heard that if you're into Metroidvanias, it might throw you off a little bit because a lot of the Metroidvanias that have been indie hits recently all sort of come from a same sort of... They have a lot of conventions.
Oh,
whereas this game is very specifically Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Right.
So if you're not a super fan of that particular series, it might take you a little while to get into it.
Okay.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. That's cool.
Vampires.
Yeah. Another game that is out now, Samurai Showdown, which is a throwback from an old fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
I never played any of the old Samurai Showdowns, but like it looks cool. I'm always interested in like revisiting older games, older fighting games and trying them out. I haven't gotten a chance to try this one out yet, but like I'm looking forward to doing that sometime soon. The next one is Crash Team Racing. It's a kart racer like Mario Kart, but with Crash characters and
yeah.
stuff.
Is this a re-release or remaster of a 90s, late 90s game?
I believe it is. Yeah, just a remaster of the old game. But I mean, a lot of people have a lot of fondness for this game because it's a kart racer that's not Mario. So everybody's like, it's better than Mario Kart. Which, like, to me, they're like kind of all the same. But
address your letters too.
Yeah.
There's this. It's just another one in this string of like nostalgia for the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
In the 90s.
That's when I stopped playing video games as a child before I picked it up again almost a decade later as an adult. So it's just like the next couple years are going to be weird for me. Like all these franchises people go crazy for that I'm like, I guess. Like I'm going to feel very old. Starts now.
it happens.
You know.
Cadence of Hyrule came out, during E3, so y'all have already been playing it, but like, you know, if you haven't, and you really like these games, play this one.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of love the story of this game, because they basically were like, hey Nintendo, we want to make a DLC for Crypt of the Necrodancer that has Zelda in it, can we do that? And they're like, no. You can make a full game with that.
And then they're like, oh man, more work.
You know, Nintendo has a reputation for being really like close guarded with their licensing, but that's not actually true. They're just very picky about what they say yes to.
Right.
But anybody can talk to them. Like they'll take a meeting. It's just they will say no most of the time.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting story, and it's kind of a lot of people sort of thought it's unbelievable that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. And like it's a unique kind of mechanic that like makes sense on a Nintendo console and a Nintendo IP.
Right. So. And the property is very Nintendo-esque, which is high adventure, lots of enemies, but not actually a violent game.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of like that weird middle ground that Nintendo really
cartoon
loves.
Cartoon violence.
They're sort of adventure genre. You know? Which is like safe for children, but it has lots of sword slashing.
Yeah.
You know?
Ha! Yeah.
Did you guys play Crypt of the Necrodancer?
Yes.
I played it a little bit.
I really like it. Yeah. I like that you can put your own music in that game.
Oh, that's cool. I know that.
Which is really fun. Well, you have to experiment because it's kind of hit or miss. If you pick a song and you're like, this is going to be really good, and you're like, oh, wait, no, it's super not. Or like if you pick one that's too short and then you lose the level you get dropped down to the next level prematurely before you got all the gold or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I couldn't get into it. I found it boring, weirdly, because it is a rhythm game.
Yeah.
And so, I'm staring at the screen and like what I want to do. And my mind gets way ahead of me.
Yeah.
Like I want to do this, 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 and this, but I have to press these 50 button inputs first.
Right. And you have to do it delayed.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Like the mechanic is interesting, but like I didn't have the patience for it.
I have thoughts.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I have thoughts.
Dare we hear them?
Well, okay. So I've been working on a game at work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prototype. And you know what? I think it's probably fine to talk about. It's not guaranteed that like we're going to work on it.
You can cage it in cloudy metaphors.
So I'm making a combination of fighting rhythm game. I've been working on a prototype for that. And so like it takes a lot of inspiration from Crypt of the Necrodancer,
mm-hmm.
where like you have to do inputs on the beat, and if you do the inputs on the beat, you get rewarded.
Yeah.
So I found myself like thinking about it. It's almost like a real-time turn-based game instead of like a fighter, but like you have to like be considerate about where you're positioning yourself and what your opponent is doing. But because everybody's inputs happen at the same time, you can't like out button your opponent. You have to outthink them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more strategic. I'm intending for it to be more strategic than other fighting games.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if that actually pans out. But that's what I'm working on.
Oh, I'd love to playtest that sometime.
Yes.
That sounds up my alley for a fighting game.
Yeah. I'll have you check it out sometime. You too, Martha.
I'll play it.
Yeah. Cool. Last thing on our list, there are plenty of other games.
Wait, if Martha plays it, then she'll beat me, probably.
Fair.
I mean, we're both be playing against Steven, so it's kind of not even...
Right.
Also fair. the last game on our list, there's a lot of releases out there, but we're just going to talk about the ones we want to talk about. Harry Potter Wizards Unite.
Mm-hmm.
That just came out. It's like Pokemon Go, but with Harry Potter, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not doing nearly as well as Pokemon did. As soon as Pokemon Go came out, everybody was like, well, I'm just going to not do work and walk outside finding Pokemon.
Right. It was
for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But with Harry Potter, it came out and like it felt like to little fanfare.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of different because, like, with Pokemon, it's already an established video game franchise, and everybody wants, in the way that, like, that world works, it makes sense that people would want to go out and find Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Harry Potter, I mean, I guess you don't really want to go out and find magic. I don't know.
Yeah, like, the metaphor doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, I guess I don't know how the thing works, but isn't the whole point of Harry Potter that magic is all around us, but we can't see it?
Yeah.
Isn't that perfect for a game like this?
You'd think, but it's not. I think that the way that they tooled it, it's not exactly like it is how you were talking about. Like, mm-hmm. you're not actively looking for magic. You're actively looking out for, like, I guess, past Harry Potter characters or something. I don't fully understand how it works.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you need to find these creatures that are, like, storing, like, Harry Potter characters from different time worlds or something. And then, then you capture
doing great.
Them. And, yeah, right. I'm trying. Then you capture them and then you release Snape or whatever. And then they're like, thank you, I guess, and putting me back in my timeline or something.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so it's like a Voyager plot.
Yes.
I was going to say it's like the video game equivalent of like pulling a bunch of earbuds out of your pocket and then untangling them.
Like, maybe, yeah. I don't know. I'm probably not doing it justice, but mm-hmm. like that was the impression.
I have heard that the game mechanics are more interesting and more varied than Pokemon Go.
Ah, okay.
But that wasn't why people liked that game at launch.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Because there was barely any. Yeah.
I think there's two reasons why maybe this hasn't made as big a splash. One is it's been done before.
Yeah.
And so it's not as novel.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say Ingress didn't exist, but, you know, no one knew about it.
Right.
Niantic made this game too. So it's like, it's not even a copy. Like, it's just one firm that makes these games.
Uh-huh.
I think the other reason is that Pokemon, it had millions of fans, mm-hmm. but it was still kind of niche. And so when you heard about this new game, Pokemon Go, if you were a Pokemon fan, you're like, oh man, this is amazing. Something for me.
Yeah.
And if you've never heard of Pokemon or you've never not been into it, but you know, a lot of people around you have, because it wasn't like it was, you know, a cult hit or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, oh, what's this all about? Harry Potter has like a theme park and a million movies.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And
non-nerds are into it.
Well, it's just a new Harry Potter thing comes out. And even if you like Harry Potter, you're like, I'll get to that. Like, there's no urgency. There's no curiosity.
Huh.
I think that really is a big difference. You know?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Like, I can imagine the same thing happening with like a Star Wars game like this, where you go out and you know, fight secret stormtroopers or whatever however they map this Google Maps thing to it.
Yeah.
I imagine someone in a boardroom thinking like, oh, it's the most popular thing. Of course people will love it as much as Pokemon. I don't think that would do as well either. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, I guess that's not something I had considered, like how, because I am so divorced from Harry Potter, I don't pay attention to it really at all. That I didn't think of it as popular as it is, but like you can consume it in so many different ways already. You don't really need to consume it on your phone again.
Yeah.
In this way.
Mm-hmm.
So people aren't doing it. That makes sense. Yeah. Those are the releases we decided to talk about. let's get into the news. Summer Games Done Quick is happening right now as we record this.
Is it? So it is Saturday.
It is Saturday.
Yeah. It's a Saturday. I thought it's been going on for a couple of days. How long does Summer Games Quick go?
It goes on for a week.
Yeah, I think it ends tonight.
I thought it ended tomorrow, but maybe.
Oh, okay.
Listeners, this has ended for you already, but
yeah.
I've been watching it more mm-hmm. than in past years.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, it must be over by now. Because like they couldn't do this for longer than 2 or 3 days.
Oh, no. They do it for a whole week.
Yeah.
And it's 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just constantly running.
Well, yeah. At this part, like the people who are running the thing are like, whoo, we're really tired. I hope y'all are having a good time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is a huge endurance thing for them. I'm always a little concerned how they're doing. Like doing that kind of stuff. It's happening here in Bloomington, which is cool. I always wanted to.
I know. I always miss the tickets. Yeah, I think we should get some and go next year.
I'm going to put a reminder on my calendar because I had the same thing. It's like, I would love to just have, because, you know, you see at 2 a.m., the ballroom is like empty.
Yeah.
And you're like, they'll let me in.
Right.
Right. But no, they're very regimented about their tickets because it is a very popular event. People fly in for it.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know any locals who go.
I still feel like, because there's some days where like there are less popular games, so people are like you'll see like a few scattered people and then nobody, and it's like, man, if they sold local tickets, that you'd have to stand at the door and wait till it starts, and if it was full, you wouldn't get to watch it. But
yeah,
that would work, kind of like how GDC passes work when you have an indie pass.
Mm-hmm. That might work better if Bloomington was a little more centrally located.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's already logistically an incredibly complicated event to put on.
Oh, so, yeah.
I suppose they're not looking for ways to further complicate it.
Yeah, I totally understand their reasoning, but personally, I would love to go for like an evening to go see.
Right.
Yeah. Right, because once the schedule is out, yeah, just like, these are the things I want to see or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
the other day, I watched the Banjo-Kazooie one, and it was really funny because everybody was just making all the noises.
Yeah.
They're like, whoa, hey, and stuff. It's
really fun. So one of the things that's come up on Twitter and Game Dev Twitter is the observation that happens every time, and this Games Done Quick speedrunning thing happens twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Summer one happens here. The winter one happens where?
I don't know.
Some other place.
It happens in Maryland or Maine. Or one of those. It moved to the.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Somewhere warm.
But every time one of these comes up, there's Game Dev Twitter is always kind of like complaining a little bit, like, okay, this is the time of year when a bunch of gamers get together and talk about how poorly developed games are.
Oh.
And it is sort of interesting to see someone, like a bunch of people playing a game that they have been studying for 20 years.
Right, yeah.
And they find the one bug that can skip like half a level.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, this thing's just a really lazy put together, like it's a bad coding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not serious about it. Like, right. I think, you know, one, they raise millions of dollars for Doctors Without Borders. So, like, let them be ignorant. I don't care. But also, it's different from when you see, like, on Reddit threads and on just gamer Twitter talking about lazy devs. It's a different strain of that.
Yeah.
But it stings particularly because these are the people who supposedly know these games really well and should appreciate how few cracks in the armor there are.
Yeah.
And so every time they say that, even jokingly, even not so seriously, like when with respect, it still stings a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, there was the Borderlands 2 speedrun, and they actually had some, like the level designer and a couple other people, on the call, so like they had called in.
I love it when they do that.
Yeah, and it was really cool, but there was some really uncomfortable parts where they were like, this is so broken, and they're like, yeah, we tested that for like a really long time.
Right, yeah.
It was like, oh, whoops.
I feel like they've gotten better than they have in previous years about saying
stuff,
but I mean, it still happens.
Right, it's part of a casual conversation in speedrunning.
Yeah.
Because exploiting bugs is what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, they appreciate the existence of these little, you know, issues.
Yeah.
But the way they talk about it sometimes can be a little insensitive. And I think it's because a lot of people in speedrunning, it's very separated from game dev organizations.
It's funny because, yeah, it's very separate, but also very related because, like, they have to like understand your code without seeing the code,
right?
In a way, like, so and it's hard
ultimately they end up thinking they know how games are made.
Yeah,
and this is not me being like, you know, like, oh, that they have no idea.
Yeah,
but like they have a different idea, and right. I think it's very easy to convince yourself you know how it's put together because of all the work you did to learn how to play it.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, you have special knowledge. It's not, it's just not the kind of special knowledge you think.
I even do that as a game dev. I'll be like, oh, I see how you did that, when I have no idea how they actually did that.
Yeah.
And I make games for a living, so even this close to it, I still have that hard time. So
yeah,
I see it.
There was one like a bunch of cool moments though where they were complaining about something and there was a playtester in the group too from Gearbox, and they were like, yeah, we hate that too, because there's one part where you have to follow Claptrap, and if you like in the speed run, if you do something wrong, he gets stuck and will like just talk in a place and won't actually do the go past the thing. And they're like, we hate him so much. And the playtester was like, me too. It was kind of funny.
That must be why I don't like Claptrap. Because I was QA tester.
Yeah.
That's funny.
One of my favorite categories for these are the races.
Yeah.
And it works best with shorter games. Uh-huh. And I saw a race of the NES Gauntlet.
Oh, cool.
That was a game I played a lot as a kid. It was one of the few games I owned. And so the old black Tengen cartridge.
Yeah.
And seeing people just like, one, just tear through it is amazing.
Yeah.
But also the race that they did this year was like neck and neck.
Those are the best ones to watch.
One of the players got this great exploit, which gave them like infinite keys, which like really gives you a leg up. Oh. And so they would like bound ahead, and then they would get stymied by some bad RNG, and the other player would catch up and then be ahead a little bit. And it was like riveting. Like,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really fascinating.
That's awesome.
And of course, I haven't played that game in a long time, and I never beat it. So
yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, it's a very hard game.
Yeah.
I was watching the Dark Souls runs, and I don't like that game very much. I've never played it, but I've watched other people play it, and just like the speed run, they have some glitches that make the damage they do so huge that the game just is so silly looking, because they come up to this huge boss that's like, wah, and they go blink, and then they're dead.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, I watched there was a series of Punch-Out runs.
Oh man, did you watch the blind one?
Yeah.
Oh.
So first it was arcade Punch Out.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating because I've never seen that. Mm-hmm. They played an emulated version because the original arcade version is on two screens.
Oh.
And so they played the virtual console
version. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And that was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Also, they talked a lot about the history of that series and a lot of the concepts. And it was a fun history lesson.
Cool.
And then the next one was the same runner.
Yeah.
Did Punch Out Wii blindfolded.
Oh man.
You saw that.
Yeah. It was so intense. And he didn't lose any of the matches. I've seen other blind Punch Out runs, and they like lose them, and they expect to, because like you're doing it blind.
Yeah.
And like Punch Out is known for like its very dramatic animations and stuff, but not so much for its sound design. They do a decent job of it, but like, you know, you can't get everything.
Well, the Wii version has lots of audio cues.
Yeah.
And vibration cues on the controller.
That's true.
So that was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the runner, he got through with the whole thing without losing any of the fights.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was his fastest time ever. He got it all on stream
too. He only even got like knocked down, like not knocked out.
Yeah.
But he only got knocked down like once.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Oh man.
And he kept talking the whole time about how like we're probably gonna have to go to round two on this one.
Yeah.
And it was like comical how he underestimated his ability to do it. And it was like a minute shy of his personal best without a blindfold.
Yeah. Wow. Oh man. That was a amazing.
Which makes sense for a game like Punch Out, because it's very much about memorization.
Yeah.
But it was so fascinating.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
That one, that's my favorite one so far.
Yeah.
Hands down. So check that one out if you get a chance.
And I think it really does help when the people who run the games and the people on the couch, as they say, who do the commentary, like those people being interesting is kind of what matters most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one run that I was looking forward to watching, and I did, but the player and the commentator were not interesting, and it really, really soured it. And and it was unfortunate, because like not everyone has the skills to be like a broadcast announcer, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you can't, you know, but it makes you appreciate the people that they pick to do these runs, their ability to not only be good at the game, which is already something you've spent a lot of time, but also to be like sociable, personable, interesting, knowing when to talk about the game's history versus its bugs, and like what's fascinating. And like, it ends up just being enjoyable on that. And it really makes you appreciate the presentation style a lot of these people when you see someone who doesn't do it quite as well.
Yeah.
And then there's some people that like have fancier presentations like during the thing that aren't related to the game. Like there was this one Fire Emblem thing I was had up while I was working on stuff at work. And they did like a whole skit. There's like a whole marriage thing in Fire Emblem. And, like they did a whole skit. There were people doing the voice acting, and it was actually really good voice acting. I was impressed. It was really funny. So, you know, you can entertain your viewers that way too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways of going about it. Yeah, but it's real cool. I mean, at this point, it's been archived. You can watch all the stuff on Twitch on their channel.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they've raised a ton of money. Just a ton of it. Because they already broke their record from last year.
Did they?
I think so. They got a million more sooner than they expected to. So
that's good. Yeah, I think it was 2 million is the threshold this time, right? They're around there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know yet because it's not over, but
yeah.
They do seem to make more each time. So presumably that continues. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I need to donate. I need to remember to do that. there are the news. Steam sales that have just been recently happening as of this recording, and they have been causing games to get removed from the wish lists. Right? Is that
Do either of you know how this game works that they've been doing?
Not, I mean, does anyone? It's very confusing. Basically, you sign up for a team, and then everyone signed up for the Corgi team, and they had a problem with that because then they were like winning the game too quickly.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing is that the winner each day or something, they pick random people from that team to get a free game off their wish list. And that's where the problem.
It's a random drawing with some metagame component that I don't totally understand.
Yeah.
But what they had a miscommunication. They said like, oh, your top, you know, wish list game. And so what that, if you were randomly selected, then when you would do a wish list, and I didn't know this is how wish list worked, you can rank your wish list on based on which one you wish the most.
Yeah.
Like it was like a Christmas list for Santa or something. I don't know. But, and if you won, you got the game at the top of your wish list, right? Which makes sense. That's an interesting a prize. Great. Good for them. But they communicated in such a way that people thought it was a random game from their wish list. And so what that meant is like, oh man, I have a million of these like cheap indie games in my wish list. And even though I want them really badly, I would rather get a $60 game for free than a $10 game for free.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening is a bunch of people started just clearing out their wish lists.
Ah.
And so you can see game devs posting on Twitter their wish list charts. You can see wish lists over time. And you see these enormous drops. And this happens during every sale to a degree because people go in and curate their wish list because they get an email that says, hey, something on your wish list is on sale. And they're like, oh, I should go and prune the games I never were going to pick up or don't want anymore.
Yeah.
So there's always a little bit of a dip. But this was like a thousandfold increase in the drops.
Wow.
And
okay.
The wish lists are very important for PC developers because visibility on Steam is very low. And if you capture someone's attention at any time during your pre-release and they click that button, it is a reminder to them to buy your game, and you don't. It's easier to capture them when it's time to ask them for $15.
Yeah,
and so it seems kind of silly because like the customers just choose what to buy when they buy it, but like removing that reminder is a huge disincentive to ever picking up the game, even if they did actually want it. And so
it also hurts game launches. Like this was affecting some games that weren't even out yet, and like the amount of wish lists you have when you launch like affects. Like Steam's thing.
The algorithm for front page stuff.
Yeah. So like these devs who were like, you can't even win my game. It's not even out. Like they would never give that to you.
Right.
Like it's not going to there's no way that would affect you in any way. We're just seeing like total, like they have to start over basically on our stuff.
Yeah. So Steam tried to make good, Valve tried to make good on it. Trying to clarify the messaging. But also they're positioning it more as a, like a we're sorry gamers for confusing you, and game devs are like, ugh, like okay,
yeah.
Right? Thanks, Steam.
So Valve doesn't always know the power it has.
Which is that seems to be the trend. They don't know.
They don't really know what the left hand is doing. Right hand.
Well, they don't have any managers. They're flat hierarchy, and so things like typos and stuff come through all the time, like stuff like that. And so they have a couple of good systems that run really well because of the people who at Valve who do them. And there's a bunch of little things on the fringes that are not really looked at very carefully,
Right.
Or not analyzed to see what the full effect is, I don't want to characterize them as like a clown car, but like sometimes it feels that way.
Yeah. I don't know.
Itch.io, everybody.
Yes. Another news, Dr. Disrespect, who's a famous streamer, I think plays PUBG and stuff like that, was removed.
So this is a streamer in 2019. This is not a 1981 radio personality?
Right, yes. Yeah, I know. Looking at him, you'd think that. But he streamed himself going. He went into a bathroom and he streamed while he was going into the bathroom.
This was at
E3. Yes. And he got banned from Twitch as a result of that. But he only was banned for 2 weeks.
And he was banned from E3
because it is
against policy to take a video camera into a bathroom.
Right.
And weirdly, he didn't know that.
Yeah. He didn't think it through. And so it just reminds me of a lot of like things that streamers have done in the past that are disrespectful, to say it nicely.
to use a phrase.
Yeah. It just reminds me of like how they didn't really get punished for it much. I mean, certainly Dr. Disrespect lost a bunch of money because like he wasn't streaming for 2 weeks, but like he was still talking about stuff on Twitter and things like that. And it didn't seem like he didn't seem worried about like his standing on Twitch. And literally just 2 weeks later, you know, it got revoked, and now he's back streaming again.
I don't know anything about this person. Do you, either you've watched him?
I don't watch him. Because
just the name says that is sort of like a shock jock style.
Yeah. And not really Nice Games Club compatible.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I haven't watched a lot of his stuff, but I've read like some articles and things about like things that have happened to him. Like I think recently he... there was like gunshots in where while he was streaming and stuff. So he like turned the stream off for a moment to like deal with that stuff like that. These kinds of things can happen because like you're streaming in your house or whatever.
Right.
Like, people see that and I don't know. Or it could just be random shootings. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he has been, I think he hasn't been as like provocative as other streamers, but like he has been in the news sometimes for doing some bad.
So thing. Not like an infamous malcontent.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, part of his appeal is, you know.
And I think part of the persona is that too. Like he wears a wig and he has he has the mullet and stuff. He looks like he's in the 80s. I think that's like part of his whole getup. But like he seems like sort of nice enough of a person, but like I don't know. I think that like some of this is just like, you know, they're sort of like not startups, but kind of like startups where like they don't know all of the things. They don't know all the policies. They don't know all the business practices, the good things that they should do. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of feel like they can do whatever they want. And
and they should do things that might not be totally like on the edge of the rules because that will get them more followers.
Right. Yeah. So like those are the kinds of things that I think that.
And you know, this is, it's the downside of what is generally a very good thing, which is the sort of like removal of gatekeepers to this type of audience. So YouTube and Twitch have done a really good job of like despite various controversies of allowing marginalized voices to build audiences instead of, you know, someone at a TV network deciding that you can talk to people.
Right.
That's great. But on the other side of that is like, there's a reason gatekeepers work because they can have policies and they could tell someone before they take a video camera into the bathroom, hey, we actually know you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the responsibility of the wacky personality to, you know, because that's the thing. Everything I've read about this seems like this was an innocent mistake, just a really dumb mistake.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was going in to film people going to the bathroom.
Right. No.
He just took a camera into the bathroom and be like, hey, I'm in a bathroom.
He was, it seemed to me like he was just streaming and like needed to go to the bathroom. So he was like,
wouldn't this be funny? A little bit. Yeah. And so that's, I mean, there's something that's a nice relief from the other types of controversy streamers get into.
True.
But at the same time, like just the lack of foresight is astounding.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's like a solution other than to further professionalize what really has benefited from being an amateur field.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Yeah. It's hopefully a new discussion that people will have. Well, not a new one, but like one continuing discussion that people
have. There's the 2 week ban from Twitch. Yeah. It sounds like you don't think that was a harsh enough penalty.
It was an invasion of privacy is what he did, even if he didn't intend for that to happen. So I do think that like he should have been punished more for it.
Yeah.
And like, I do think that a lot of Twitch, especially huge Twitch streamers, don't get enough. They don't get enough punishment when they screw up.
Right. And maybe Twitch doesn't know how much it wants to be the school marm in the situation.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, if they're not going to learn after 2 weeks, is a month going to make any difference?
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting.
They'd certainly feel it more in their wallets.
Yeah. There's that. Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess where I'm at. But also, I don't watch enough. Especially these kinds of streams to like know. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of an outsider looking in going, you know, I do this thing. Yeah. Clouds.
Wear a suit.
Yeah. Wear suits. I've been on stage before and I haven't worn a suit on stage. Dang it. Gotta wear a suit on stage. Next time. This is not exactly news, but there aren't any Twitch channels on Roku anymore and I'm mad.
I'm sorry for your loss.
This has been my TED Talk. They just Twitch removed channels like a couple of years ago because like Amazon bought them and Amazon has their own streaming things.
They moved their app from
Amazon Fire TV is the thing. They moved their app from that and put it on Amazon Fire TV or whatever it is now.
Roku is one of the few like pieces of hardware that is not also tied to a big media content provider.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So it wanted to be the place where everything could come and be sort of neutral ground.
Yeah.
But that's less true as time goes on.
Yes. But there was this one channel called Twitch. I have to say duh, because otherwise you won't hear it. you can use to watch Twitch streams. And I was using that. I would watch Smash players, Smash tournaments. And I wanted to use it to watch like Summer Games on Quick at home, mm-hmm. but they turned the channel off. They took it off of Roku. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure on all the details as to why they did that, but I'm just frustrated.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share that on the podcast.
I wonder if that's like they limit their access to their API. This is Twitter. This happened to Twitter, where like third-party Twitter apps were really popular in the early days of Twitter.
Yeah.
And Twitter positioned itself as a protocol rather than a website and app, right?
Sure.
And then as time went on, and they're like, no, we'd rather actually just control our service, which makes sense. But like back then, it wasn't there. All these third-party apps started dropping away.
Yeah.
And people got very upset about it because they had sort of. This is the way they preferred to use this service.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so that might be what's happening with Twitch, where they're just like, let's just stop letting other people present our product, I guess.
Well, it would be nice if they put the Twitch app on Roku so then I could use Twitch the way they want to use it. But like, I can see where they're...
And they're just losing revenue because there's all the ads that you would see.
Yeah. Yep. And it was tired of ranting. We can talk about Treyarch, the creators of Call of Duty Black Ops 4. Mm-hmm. And there was an article on Kotaku recently about like how they went through a bunch of crunch and stuff while they were developing the game because there was a big change in how they wanted the game to work.
Right.
And Jason Schreier, who has talked about a lot of these kinds of things, talked about like BioWare and the work conditions there and stuff. Mm-hmm. Reported on this news and reported on like the conditions of crunch that they had and the conditions specifically like the QA people who were working at Activision or at Treyarch, the working conditions that the QA felt like a lot of the people were not even allowed to, they felt discouraged from even communicating from developers to developers and things like that because I don't know, there was some kind of a company
QA was a contracted firm, I believe, and so they were separated through company culture as well, like actual terms, from the developers, and so it was harder, I think, to communicate, and there was a lot, people who worked in QA would, like, they would not be at, like, things like company picnics and stuff, so, like, it ended up creating this sort of culture of separation, and it ended up being unhealthy and unhappy.
Yeah, and it's already bad in a lot of these companies for QA because, like, people... they don't associate good things with QA because they feel like it's not a job that, you know, has a lot of talent and is not, you don't need a lot of skills in order to do that, which is not true. But like people have that feeling on it. And also like QA reports on the bugs and stuff you did wrong.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't,
well, people right. get into QA to get into the games industry.
Yes.
Much like the way people become production assistants to get into filmmaking.
Right.
But the job of a production assistant has very few overlaps with the job of a filmmaker other than being on a film set. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of people who are higher up in film look at production assistants and don't see someone that is any more qualified than someone outside the industry. And that ends up being a lot of tension and that is frustrating. And QA is the same way where people have this assumption that the work of QA doesn't always, that someone who is not destined to become a good game developer could be good at QA and someone who is, you know, not great at doing QA could certainly be a game developer. Like they don't see a lot of a direct path.
Yeah.
Whereas going into QA, someone who does that very frequently is someone who wants to work in game development.
Yes.
And so that is always not always recognized.
Yeah. But I mean, not just that, but like just being QA is not a bad thing at all. Period. Like
there people are look down on it.
And it's a huge. It's hugely important. And not just that, but like because of like the crunch that was happening because of Black Ops 4 and like how they changed gears and stuff and shifted into a completely different thing than what they wanted to do in the past. Most of the time when there's a lot of crunch happening in these industries, in these companies, game developers feel it, but QA feels it a lot more because they have to, whenever game developers make a change, QA has to test that.
Yeah.
They were talking about in this article, Jason Schreier was talking about how like they had 24-hour QA people and they just took shifts, 12 hours in the morning and 12 hours in the evening.
Oh,
and they
God.
Would just switch between.
Yeah.
And
what's worse is like if you're working in QA, you are made to feel as if the weight of it is on your shoulders too, which is that's the most unfair part is like is given no authority or responsibility, but given all the demands that in order to, you know, that require the game to be out. It ends up being on you. And that is a weird consequence of the way these things are structured.
Yeah. And that's not good.
Yeah. You're just a cog in this machine, but like, you know, you better be perfect.
Right.
Right.
You better be a perfect cog,
you know?
Well, yes. Hopefully.
Respect QA.
Yes. QA is awesome. Thank you. Halal and Alex, I don't think y'all listened to me on this thing, but they are dookie way for me at work.
Yeah.
I'm so appreciative of them for finding all of the bugs, even though I might get frustrated for having to fix the bugs.
Yeah.
Another news, Valve Index is out, and you told me that, Mark, and I was like, what is that? Are you talking about stocks? I don't know what that is.
We've already talked about this on the show.
I know. I guess, but I forgot.
Yeah.
It is their new VR helmet. Headset thing.
No, helmet. Let's go with helmet.
Helmet. Right, yeah, helmet. It protects your hand, and also you can play games on it. but it's very powerful, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's Valve's expression of like the highest end of the technology. Mm-hmm. You can go back and listen to a couple episodes ago when we talked about when this was announced, Valve's intent of taking what HTC did with the Vive and making their version of it, make a true Steam VR headset.
Yeah.
And it's out, and the reviews are coming in where we're sitting when we record this. Mm-hmm. And that the response has been pretty much what we expected, which is this is an incredible experience and it costs too much.
And it's hard to set up still.
Yeah.
And sometimes Steam crashes, and then what do? Your hands are stuck in this thing, and then you have to go to the computer and go. So it's really, really cool when it works.
Yep.
Is the consensus so far.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
So,
well, yeah. Are y'all planning on getting it at all? I mean, you said it yourself. It's really expensive.
Yeah, I've got all the VR headsets until now.
Okay.
I don't have the new Oculus headsets, and I don't think I'm getting the Index.
Okay.
And I'm a little sad about that, but I don't have a reason to pick it up yet. Sure. I'm not actively developing a VR project. And if I was, I've got plenty of headsets to test it on.
That's true.
That I will need to have compatibility with. So there's no need for me. But it kind of bums me out because I do sort of wanted to, you know, when VR first came out, just there was something really fun about opening up a box, testing it out, trying all the new experiences, seeing what game developers, what their experiments were. And that was really fun. Mm-hmm. But that moment, I think, has sort of passed for me.
Okay.
It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's too expensive. If it were cheaper, then I could talk myself into it.
Sure.
But it's just too expensive for what is essentially a very similar experience to what I can already get.
Yeah. Is that the same for you,
Martha? Yeah, well, we just don't have enough space now for to have the setup set up.
Oh yeah.
So I was thinking of maybe getting one of the Quests just because it could be in other spaces besides the one where my rig is, which is the problem.
Play in the backyard or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so we'll be probably waiting on this too.
Okay.
Because we don't have the current one set up, so it's not worth it.
Sure. Well, the jury's out on the Nice Games Club official consideration for the Valve Index, I suppose.
And it's difficult because they introduced these new controllers, which is a lot of things that developers will need to support. And a lot of really high-profile VR games have been announcing support for these controllers and their new features. But if you buy them separately for your Vive, which you can do, which is kind of cool, you can do this modularly, it's like almost $300 just for the controllers.
Wow.
So it's...
$300 for controllers.
Well,
wow.
They're nice controllers.
I mean, sure.
But that's the issue is like, well, then is there ever going to be enough people that have them for developers to be focusing on this input method? I'm a little worried about that.
Yeah, I guess Valve would have to not develop them themselves because they don't do that really anymore, but publish some games for it in order for that to be used.
Right.
I mean, there was a demo Valve put out. I think it was Valve. I mean, it's Portal 2 themed, so.
Yeah. Similar when the Vive came out, they had the lab. The lab was a really great showcase for VR.
Okay.
And they did something similar for the Index.
Okay.
When I was testing the Index controllers, the pre-release versions a couple months ago, and they had a demo thing that they distributed for people to try it, all the new features.
Okay.
And I didn't think it was that impressive. But this is a consumer experience that apparently has been well received.
Okay.
So they're working on software at Valve, it turns out.
Just not exactly what you'd want.
Right. Yeah. It's not coming, y'all. Half-Life 3 is dead.
Yeah.
Nintendo has taken down yet another fan game. There's a Super Mario Royale game that came out. It's like Battle Royale, but Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
I guess you just like run through the level, but there's 100 people also running through the same level.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible to watch. Did either of you play it before?
I did not get to play it. No,
I did, and it was interesting. It was kind of laggy, which kind of defeats the purpose of it.
Yeah.
But that might have been my connection at the time when I played it.
Okay.
But it's really cool. You just run through, and as soon as you die, then you're out, and see how, and you see the sort of like cloud of Mario's all on screen at once.
Yeah.
And you have to find yourself in that cloud. Which is actually kind of part of the fun challenge of it.
Yeah.
You see the cloud thin as you get closer to the end of World 1.1. It's pretty good.
That's fun.
That is a really good idea.
Yeah, but it's still up. They just changed a bunch of sprites.
Yeah, they changed the name to DMCA Royale.
Right.
Funny.
That's hilarious.
That is kind of funny, but it really strikes me as something. This is something Apple used to do all the time. Every time Apple got sued, they would name some product of theirs in a snide way to comment on the situation.
Yeah.
So there's a sound effect called Susumi.
Uh-huh.
And Sosumi.
Oh.
Because it was a part of a dispute. And so like they just had like a weird attitude about it. So every time I see stuff like that, I kind of just like roll my eyes around a little bit.
Okay.
Like I'm like, just give it a fun name of your own choosing. Don't be like, anyway.
Yeah.
But Nintendo really, there's an article that was like Nintendo needs to chill, which is a perfect sentiment for this. Like it wasn't hurting anybody. Mm-hmm. Why, you know? But they're very.
We were just talking about it. They're very strict about like their IP and who can use it and stuff. So, yeah, I suppose they need to protect it in order to protect the brand, I guess. But like, I don't know. They don't have to be as strict about it.
But it's also an indictment of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, because that gives first power to the claimant. So this use of Mario
is
a transformative work. It's a commentary on the original gameplay.
Right.
It is undeniably a fair use of the Mario IP.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are lots of times when I will side with the copyright holder on principle, because even if the result is bad, they have the right to decide how their work is being shown.
Sure.
This is not that.
Yeah.
This is absolute fair use of the Mario IP. But they can get it taken down by request. It is then the responsibility of the person who made the transformative work to make the argument that it should be put up. And that is not what they should not have the burden.
Yeah.
And so Nintendo uses that to its advantage to just sort of like throw all these requests, and who wants to fight them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Good luck beating Nintendo.
Well, I mean, City Hall, honestly, good luck beating anybody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just that Nintendo's an 800 pound gorilla, to use a phrase. it's that just actually understanding the law, you know it's fair use just because of common sense, perhaps, but you might not know exactly the legal argument to make.
Right.
And you don't want to hire a lawyer, and you don't want to, like, where do I file this? Like, how do I, you know, do all these things? And, you know, there are remedies that websites set up for takedowns. Like, if you get something taken down on YouTube, you go to YouTube to make your request.
Yeah.
Not always true if it's elsewhere.
Yeah.
If you, like, a letter that says you're going to take this down.
Yeah.
So it's a sorry state of affairs.
Yeah.
Oh. Interesting story I read recently is Nintendo got sued by Universal Pictures because Donkey Kong is basically King Kong, let's all be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Right, which is funny because, you know, how they are now. Mm-hmm. But they won a lawsuit against Universal, which tried to get them to stop using that name because there was a mistake in the copyright filing, and therefore it was proven that King Kong was not subject to copyright protection.
Oh,
it wasn't
that
Nintendo didn't infringe it. It's just that it didn't matter.
Oh.
And so the lawyer who won that case for them was named Kirby. And that is why Kirby is named that, because Nintendo was thankful and named their character after that. So it's a...
I remember that story.
It's an interesting history.
Yeah, that's fun times.
I just learned this like the other day. So.
Oh,
it's fresh in my mind.
Yeah. And other fun news. Xbox there's an exploit where you can get their service that they talked about on the stage on E3.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? You get Xbox Live Gold and Xbox
Game Pass for Xbox and Game Pass for PC.
Yes. All of that stuff in one package. They've been trying to sell it as a package for $1 at right now currently?
Right. So the way it works is there right now you can buy Xbox Live Gold.
Yes.
These auto names are all ridiculous.
Yeah.
Xbox Live Gold is the thing that lets you play games online for Xbox, right? You also get the free old games every month, whatever, like PS Plus. This is not news. Everybody knows this.
Yeah.
But then Game Pass is that they've had this for a little while and they've been promoting it heavily, which is people say it's Netflix for games, but that's not the case. Mm. It's a curated list of 100 games around that cycles in and out, and it's always around that number. So yeah. It's not going to balloon like the Netflix library.
Sure.
And those are games that are available to free for people who have the service. And then if you don't have the service, you don't have it anymore. So it's like Netflix in that way. And that's been around for a little while. They announced Game Pass for PC, which is similar, but for PC games. And they say, oh, well, we've got these things, these three subscription services. Let's just bundle them. And it's like called like Xbox Live Ultimate or something like that.
Yeah.
And in order to promote that, they're like, oh, the first month is for $1. So, you know, sign up now, first month $1, which sounds a little bit like, okay, yeah, but you're going to set up recurring payments, all those normal things, uh-huh. Right? So, but interestingly enough, the way it works on their, like the way e-commerce works is that if you have like a live subscription for like a prepaid for like a year or something,
yeah.
Then when you get that ultimate, well, it includes live. So they need to prorate the difference. So the way they handle this on their like technical side is they just say, oh, well, you're going to pay for a month. We'll add an extra month to the end of your existing service. We'll convert your live account to an ultimate account and add a month for $1.
Wow.
Which means all the months you've prepaid, you now get these two extra services for no cost for those months. So what you can do, and you can still do this, is you can buy up to 3 years, because you can only buy up to 3 years in advance. After that, you can't buy anymore.
Sure.
3 years of Xbox Live, which is the cheapest of their services, then take advantage of the $1 promotion, and you've got 3 years of these three services for the cost of one, saves you hundreds of dollars, hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
If you were going to do this anyway. If you're not going to do this anyway, it actually costs you, you know.
Uh-huh.
So there's always that to consider.
Right.
But it's an astoundingly stupidly good deal.
Like,
and so people are like, oh man, we better do this quick before Xbox notices.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this the other day on Twitter. Xbox has a promoted tweet promoting this service, and at the end, they're like, "All prepaid months convert." Wink, wink. Like they didn't put the wink, wink in there, but you can hear it, right? So they know that this is an exploit, and they're not going to stop it. So
do it now.
That's kind of good. But here's as a developer, this is interesting to me. Yeah. I don't have Xbox Live Gold. Like it's not something I've needed for a while, but I'm curious to do this because the thing with Game Pass is a lot of Game Pass games are day one releases.
Oh, right.
And as a game developer, I sometimes like, I really should play an Assassin's Creed on day one just to like, so I know, I can learn about, you know, be more familiar with games that are out there.
Sure.
And so I'm kind of tempted because then I'll just have these games in my library I would never have bought otherwise.
Yeah.
And actually be able to understand some like new emerging mechanics. And like, so I'm tempted for that reason.
Okay.
I don't know if that appeals to either of you.
Well, we should have a whole topic on like what's the thing, the list of games that you haven't played before.
Yes, I want to talk about that because I'm going through my itch library right now.
Backlogs.
Yes, right?
Yes, backlogs.
I don't have that problem, so
I also don't have that problem because like I feel like if I buy a game, I'm not gonna play it. I just accepted that fact. It's too late,
and you just forget about it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, literally. I only have like 6 games installed on Steam, and those games I all play. And if I stop playing it, I uninstall it and then forget I have it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
That's this one.
That's how I work.
Although, I mean, maybe you're giving yourself too much credit. You're still buying games you don't play.
Yes, this is true. Well, that's why I stopped buying bundles and stuff because I was realizing I was buying all these games and I only bought the bundle for one game.
Right.
So like, it's just stopped buying bundles and just bought the game.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, there is something. That's the thing about it. That's why I'm trying to like caveat this incredible. It's like an incredibly good deal.
Yeah.
But if you don't have these services and don't want them, it still costs you a fair amount of money.
Right, yeah.
You just get way more than you paid for.
Yeah.
But if you don't want it, then the deal's not worth it, mm-hmm. right? But there's a psychological element to it. And I'm falling victim to that for certain. It's like, such a good deal.
I mean, to be fair, it is a good deal.
Yeah.
So I get that. But yeah, I was the same way with like free PlayStation Plus and the Xbox Live games. They would give me, you know, they give you free ones.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want these. I'm not going to download them just because I have access to them.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to play them.
I do have PlayStation Plus.
Yeah.
And the reason I have that instead of Xbox Live Gold, they both give you free games each month.
Right.
The reason I do that is because indie games tend to come to PS Plus more frequently.
Yeah.
And so I do play those games.
Sure.
I play about maybe half the games that come out, which feels worth it to me.
Yeah, if you're going to play the games, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. But my brother was always like, you know what? You should download this game. It's free. And I'm like, but I'm not going to play it. Why download it?
Yeah.
But I think we just play different things. He plays a bunch of games all the time. I play like one game, Smash, all the time.
And Skyrim.
I have declined on my Skyrim playing.
Yeah.
I haven't really been playing it that much.
You're not going cold turkey. You're trying to like wean it off.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's because Smash is out. And so I'm just switching.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Myst is being made into a movie. Martha, you said something about this.
Well, I mean, some company got the rights to make it into a movie. Whether that's going to happen or not.
It's Village Roadshow, which is a real company that really makes movies. So.
Yeah, which sounds dubious to me already.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't know if I necessarily trust someone with that sort of name to make a good Myst movie.
Is the movie going to be in like first person, or how are they going to do this?
You know, who knows?
I'm really curious. But they have the potential to make a Myst movie.
Yes.
So they've taken the rights and they are thinking about it at the very least, right?
Yeah, and I think what the article I was reading was saying that they're actually going to work with Scion and people. That might be really cool. They're thinking it's going to be kind of like, well, the rumors are is that it's going to be kind of like that Netflix interactive blah, blah, blah.
Bandersnatch or whatever.
Wow, that feels like the wrong format for Myst, actually.
I don't know.
Yeah. Speaking of intellectual property and protecting it, like Cyan has built this world of Myst, this heavily, you know, lots of lore.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they're going to be involved.
Oh,
like,
sure.
They would never, I don't think they would, maybe in the 90s when they were like, you know, just a small company with a huge surprise hit.
Yeah.
Maybe they were more likely to let some other Hollywood screenwriter take a crack at it. But I can't imagine that happening these days. It's such a storied and beloved history within the company, and they're a little more solvent these days than they were, say, a decade ago. So they've got new releases that are coming out and doing well. So I think they have the position to say they want a seat at that table.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I don't know that it's going to happen. It's because it just was like a press release. Like, they announced that this is a deal. Like, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, it includes films, TV shows, and reality programming. It's like,
which is like, what?
Reality Myst, please.
I assume that means like behind the scenes stuff at Scion, it seems related to Myst, and I'm like, they're not making a Myst game right now, so I don't know.
Well, maybe they are.
Maybe they are.
Yeah.
So it seems just like the deal is broad, right? Yeah. So these are just the terms of the deal. It doesn't mean anything else is happening.
I could see how they could do some sort of weird, like Survivor Island, with where they build all these contraptions that they have to figure out,
like escape room style.
Yeah.
You know, I would super watch that. I don't care that it would dilute the brand. I would super watch that.
Yeah, that sounds actually really cool. Can I make some really cool contraptions?
And it would have to be very 90s, like the renderings from Myst. So everything would have to be painted with that sort of spongy pattern that you see in like game shows in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it would just be that. Like,
yeah, I'd watch the heck out of that.
Yeah.
I even played.
We should pitch that. I don't know that they've thought of this yet. We need to make it happen.
I'm on email now. Another movie news, I guess. Mouse Guard, the movie was canceled. It was supposed to be made by Disney or something. I don't know exactly.
Well, it was made by Fox, and then Disney bought Fox, Disney was like, no. This isn't going to make us enough money, so
like every corporate merger,
cool projects.
Yeah.
Every corporate merger involves like shedding of projects under old regimes. And the thing about Hollywood, too, is Hollywood cycles its executives incredibly fast.
Yeah.
Like, you think of these like big, powerful companies, like in Hollywood, weirdly, they rotate who's in charge way more than you'd expect.
Huh.
And so what ends up happening is, like, once the old regime is gone, and these are the phrases they use, a lot of projects that were signed but aren't in fully production, then they got to decide, does the new regime care about it?
Yeah.
And in the case of a corporate merger, it's like that, but heightened. So tons of Fox properties are getting canceled and thrown off, and many we won't even hear about. Mm. But this is one of them, and it's really sad because it seemed like a really cool
thing.
The property is cool. It would be new to a lot of people, but it would have the grounding of a long-running a structure that was proven successful. And so it's kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. But the thing that we got out of it, at least the news, is the pre-visualization video of a lot of the test animation they did for it. And that was taken down, but there's still a GIF floating around on the internet. You can see. We'll put a link to one of them in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
But Martha, what did you think of that? You're a huge Mouse Guard fan.
Yeah, I've liked it. Mm-hmm. I'm sad that it's not. I didn't even know it was a thing until it got canceled, and now I'm like, oh man, really? Dang.
Yeah.
Would you rather have not heard it was canceled, and then you wouldn't have your heart broken? You just never know it was even up there?
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
No, I mean, even though it was canceled, since it's getting news, maybe then Disney will be like, oh, well, maybe.
I mean, that's how Deadpool worked, right?
Yeah.
So it's possible. Mm-hmm. Is Deadpool's, is that Fox?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very possible. Yeah. That was their plan all along.
Well, I mean, it is now public and there's now people reacting to it. So in 5-10 years, when someone pitches it again, to you know, they'll be like, you know, it'll be less of like, oh, explain this thing to me. They'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that at a blip and seen people seemed into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So any little bit of that public awareness probably helps grease the wheels a little the next time someone tries it.
Yeah.
I have to say about the animation though. So Martha, you ran a Mouse Guard role playing experience for us here at Glitch during role playing night, and that was my first experience with Mouse Guard, and I love the style of it, and it's very Redwall like if you're familiar with those books. And the art of it is just, it's charming in a really interesting way. All the mice were like these like squat, charming little, like, and the thing I did actually
got
was...
got little cloaks and stuff.
Yeah. I actually didn't like the test animation. I saw the whole video before they took it down.
Yeah.
And it was really impressive. Mm-hmm. But the style of it seemed like humans with mouse ears.
Oh.
It didn't, I mean, it looked good.
I mean, by the time I got to it, they'd already taken the video down, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I've only seen the GIF.
Yeah.
But.
And I don't know the series well enough to be, I don't have any ownership of its fandom or anything, but I just liked the style of it as these like little short squat mice. But instead, they look a lot more like acrobats with giant ears. And that seemed like that wasn't exactly the style I would have gone for. Mm-hmm. But it looks gorgeous. And it was made in Unreal Engine.
Yeah.
So, you know, to bring it back to game dev.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't think the movie was going to be made in Unreal. But the preview, and it looks as good as any Unreal game. Mm-hmm. Better, in fact. But is emerging. These game engines are emerging as tools for filmmakers in a really interesting way.
Yeah,
particularly for like when you're doing motion tracking, like a tracking volume, you can have a live virtual scene, so a director can actually see the settings and see the characters moving, and it can be kind of crude, like any pre-visualization. But game engines are suited to real time visuals that look great. Mm. That is what they're trying to do. Whereas the older tools that Hollywood uses more about like storyboards that came to life, and so more about the technical constraints of like making sure blocking was correct,
right,
and all of that, and just get the idea across. Yeah. So these game engines, which can do that, but also look good, at least to the naked eye, have proven really interesting to be brought into that. So I know Unity is trying to do a lot with it, making deals with various companies to actually improve the tool. But I would be really fascinated to see how this, in a couple of years, they'll be like, there's a button you can click in Unity to do 2D stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder if there'll be just a button that'll just, reorganize your workspace for a film workflow.
Ah.
You know?
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Consoles, Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony, are going against the tariffs that are put for China, importing from China, right?
Yeah.
They put out a statement. They're trying to go against this because, it would cost them money to have to. All consoles, like most game things, are made in China.
Yeah.
And so it would cost them a lot of money to, have a tariff to on all of their content get shipped here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is part of the current administration's trade war.
Yeah.
Which we don't need to get into the politics of that.
I don't want to talk about it.
but a lot of industries are kind of just like, wait, what? Like, it's a very confusing move to a lot of people in these industries. And so a lot of tech companies are like, well, can we move things to Taiwan? How quickly can we do that?
Yeah.
And still, but the thing, this is a joint statement that the three console makers put out, like all three of their general councils, like signed it.
Right.
Which is kind of incredible, actually, like that level of coordination to do it. But basically, they in the article, the letter explains how game consoles are sold in the world, which is that they're sold essentially at cost.
Yeah.
And now this is something that is you take their letter just as read, their argument is that you know, any increase will have to be passed on to the customer, because otherwise we would just lose money on everyone sold,
right?
Which is, you know, that's true sometimes anyway,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's been like consoles are notoriously expensive, and I know that like Nintendo is like the one that makes them the cheapest, but like all the other consoles, I think they tend to sell them at a loss.
And Nintendo has been for a long time is trying to be in a holdout. They're like, we want to make at least a little profit on everyone sold. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons why Nintendo consoles are very hesitant to do really high powered devices,
right?
Because then they would either have to take more of a loss, and that's not something the company generally does.
Yeah.
Whereas Xbox and Sony, they're part of their mission that is to try to admit the best technology in their thing. So they need to make it viable for them to do that. So their whole business plan revolves around, if we're going to sell these things at a loss, how do we make that money back?
Right.
And so a lot of the moves they make are geared towards that kind of market.
Yeah.
And so tariffs on their products would sort of destroy that business model.
Yeah.
And Nintendo might not suffer as much, but that is the statement anyway that they're making now. You taking it as read, you know, how well could they really weather those tariffs is a question. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of unprecedented coordination amongst that industry to just say like, this policy makes no sense.
Yeah. You can't even get a game to communicate between all the consoles.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I think this is the last bit of news we have. The Epic Games CEO was talking about why they decided to push for more exclusives on Epic Store.
Right, right.
It's interesting how he goes into detail about it. He was specifically saying like this move is good for gamers because at the very least, if the store does not do particularly well, it will still pressure Steam and other places to like change their split. Epic Store has a split where 12% of the proceeds go towards Epic and the rest of it goes towards the developers.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas Steam has it, 30% goes to Valve and the rest go to developers. So
right.
Like, they're trying to promote a larger split for the developers and stuff like that. He went into detail about like why this decision makes more sense for Epic. I guess at the end of the day, it makes more money for Epic because more people are trying to get out of the store.
Yeah.
But
it's an interesting position to take because one, it's PR, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, gamers who, you know, I think we've said on the show before, like don't always know what's going on.
Yep.
I don't think I think we're still being nice when we say that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are very comfortable with Steam. They're happy with Steam. Their Steam sale gets them lots of $4 games. They buy their $50, $60 AAA experiences. It's all in one place. It's very convenient to them. They like it.
Yeah.
And any shaking of that boat makes them uncomfortable. And so there's a lot of motivated reasoning to be like, oh, well, this is, you know, this is terrible for competition. And like, you know, without the arguments are never, I want Steam to be the only company in the marketplace.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're a gamer, you do kind of want that.
Yeah.
And like, I don't blame you necessarily.
Yeah.
But so Epic has to, they've been facing a lot of backlash from their customers,
yeah.
right? And so this is very difficult for them because they need those customers.
Right.
Like, they actually do need to convince them. And so it's in a position where what they want to say is to be like, hey, you know, in order to like wean you off of Steam so that you're not just default going there all the time,
yeah.
we need to give you some reason to come to us to buy a game that you want. And that's how we can then have competition in the marketplace so that prices can be lower for everybody and innovation can happen. And yada, yada. That's a basic capitalist argument,
yeah.
right? And but gamers don't want to hear that.
Right.
Because like, they don't want
to
hear that.
Right. And you know what? Logic and reasoning to make their decisions for them.
I don't mean that.
Yeah,
I mean that competition is messy.
Oh, well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And in this case, the messy part of it is that Epic is saying, well, we can't just offer the same games at the same price on our fledgling service,
mm-hmm.
which does not have as many features as Steam,
mm-hmm.
At the same price because what motivation does gamers have? So we'll make exclusive deals. We'll help fund development of certain games. Mm-hmm. We'll just basically just pay companies to sell their products on us only.
Yeah.
And then gamers will have to come to us and then they can decide whether to buy future games or whatever. Like it is definitely, that's just a competition practice.
Yeah.
But gamers on the internet are like, oh, Epic is making all this money from Fortnite. And so they're just dumping it on these bribes to developers to destroy Steam.
Yeah.
And it's this weird thing of like making Valve into like the little guy.
Yeah.
And I have many, many feelings on this that are, you know, I mean, people on the show have heard me talk about my unhappiness with how Steam works.
Yeah.
For developers.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing for developers is like that 12% versus 30. Like if you're a gamer, you're like, well, that's still most to the developer in both cases. Mm-hmm. Like if you're not selling a million seller game, that is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's seismic how much of a difference
if
that
you
is.
Are selling a huge game, it's a huge deal.
Well, that's true. But we're talking about that, like that line between solvency and going and working on, you know, a consumer bank software, like,
yeah,
you know, like whether you can actually do this for a living, you know, as an indie developer, like that makes a difference. Of course, the issue is like if Steam doesn't have a lot of customers, or if Epic doesn't have a lot of customers, then, you know, that split isn't worth much, right? So, you know, it's not like a, of course, obviously. But if you can sell it in both places, then, you know, you can, and you'll get those. Anyway, so it is interesting to see gamers just rail against developers who take the bribe.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and that's just so frustrating. But the main thing I've seen a lot of, more of his motivated reasoning is I've seen this happen a lot where, If you're Activision, you sell Call of Duty, mm-hmm. and all of the people who are your customers, they love the people who make the games. Mm-hmm. They don't love Activision,
yeah.
right?
Right.
Because Activision is just the money people, right? Yeah. They do the ads, and they're the ones who force you to do microtransactions, and they're an easy villain.
Yeah.
And they are, in fact, very frequently the villain. Mm. With indie developers, that a lot of them self-published, a lot of indie publishers are, you know, making it possible for those games to be sold.
Right.
But they get lumped in the same villain argument. So I'm seeing this a lot on discussion boards and comment threads where people are like, oh, Epic's going to give more money to the publishers, but you don't think the developers are going to see any of that money. And that is their way of being comfortable being against this.
Yeah.
By not coming out against a developer.
Yeah.
But the truth is they just don't know that it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It's not like your contract with a publisher isn't for every time you get these dollars, you decide how many dollars to give me. Mm-hmm. Like that's not how it works. You have a contract with a publisher that is a revenue split basically for the most part. And so anytime if a store changes their cut, it doesn't change. Do you know what I mean? I think
it doesn't change their contract all of a sudden.
And that's so obvious to developers. Like, mm-hmm. So to hear people talk about like, oh, you really think that Activision is, you know, or Devolver is going to give any of that extra money to the developers?
Yeah.
Like that's not how that works.
Yeah. But so one of it is just misinformation. It's not understanding how these things work. And the other thing is it's definitely motivated reasoning.
Yeah.
It's if I can believe that, then if I can keep the publisher as the bad guy, mm-hmm. then I don't have to feel bad about defending Steam's 70-30 cut against developers who are like, please let me do my, like make money at my job.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. And so Epic has to come out and say these things mm-hmm. in a way that tiptoes what they want to say.
Yeah.
You know, and not come up with like an economics 101 lesson.
Right. Yeah.
Which isn't going to appease anybody.
Right. As soon as I saw like people moving, Epic buying games, I guess, and putting them on their store, I was like, this is good because this will add competition. And so Valve can get, you know, get up off their butts and get some, fix their things.
Yeah.
I know that like a lot of people are just, I think a lot of people are frustrated because like they just want all their stuff on Steam because it's convenient and they don't have to move on to a new thing. And I understand that because like, mm-hmm. I hate it when I had to download a new thing every time I want a new, I want to try out this new game or whatever.
Yeah.
So I understand that, but like at the same time, there needs to be competition because it needs so that, that everybody can, you know, flourish in this industry because it's already very difficult, especially now with like, the amount of games that are released and things like that. It's hard to continue to make games at a profit and continue to do that. And so like more competition, more something, you know, anything mm-hmm. will can help with that.
Yeah.
I think like Epic having those deals is good.
Yeah.
Especially because like Epic paying a developer to make a thing is giving the developer money to make a thing.
Yeah.
So so that's
we're in favor of that.
Yeah.
Being given money to make a thing. That's
off Epic, please.
I would like more games that are DRM free so that you don't have to have them on a store.
Well, yeah, that would be,
personally
that would be good too. But I mean, I'm curious. Does Itch publish games? I think they just service the games. They have them on their service. Do they publish games and stuff too?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Okay. I think
Itch is like one guy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. So that's understandable.
It's a masterpiece of efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And truthfully, most things on itch are Steam keys. That's what most things are sold on itch as. That's true of a lot of like Humble Bundle. It's all Steam keys. It's true for a lot of third party things. And that is one of the ways that Valve maintains its monopoly is by letting other companies sell Steam keys at no cost.
Yeah.
This is also one of the defenses people say that Valve isn't a monopoly. But I think that people don't understand how monopolies work. Basically, if itch can sell Steam keys and Humble can sell Steam keys and they don't have to pay Valve any money, mm-hmm. then why would they not do that?
Yeah.
And then why would they build their own infrastructure and actually compete on platform features?
Right.
So they do have a competing store, right? And a lot of and it seems weird. Like, why would Valve do that? It's because they have the power to do that.
Yeah.
But they are basically funneling people into Steam's ecosystem, where they can buy add-on content, go to the marketplace, buy more games, and so that makes sense for them. It only makes sense for them because of the size they are. If they were a third or a fourth the size, and they had that allowed that to happen, then they'd be exploited by that.
Yeah,
they would get no money from game sales, and they would have to maintain all the back end. And this is what gamers will say because it sounds like that makes sense at any scale. Mm-hmm. But at the scale that Steam works at, that is a monopolistic practice. And so Epic and the few other stores on PC that don't sell Steam keys, they have a much greater battle to fight because they're not just competing with the Steam store; they're competing with the Steam ecosystem. That the ways to get into it are all over the internet.
Yep.
And as a developer, if I want to sell a game on itch, I do kind of just want to sell a Steam key. Like it's easier. Like,
well, a lot of the games I've been playing are not Steam keys.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of them are like you get these .exe files.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and a lot of times, especially if you're making a Unity game, I don't even think you can use Steam's DRM with Unity. Like it's hard to implement.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can, but it's not default. So a lot of times it really just is about like chat feasters, achievements, all this stuff that the platform offers. That's what makes it easy for people. And if you sell a game and you don't sell a Steam key, then like people like Martha are going to be like, yes, please. Because like I don't need Steam in my life, like controlling everything. But not everyone's like Martha, right? Some that will demotivate certain people.
Right.
And that's frustrating. So as a developer, you do feel like you have no choice. You do want to offer multiple options. And that's a little easier than it used to be.
Yeah.
And developers should do multiple options.
If they can.
And that's the thing, if they can.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't have the development resources to do that. They have to go to where the people are.
Right.
And with Epic's just trying to make somewhere else to go.
Yeah.
That's kind of a good thing.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and it's all on PC anyway. Like, it's not even exclusive.
Yeah.
It still works on your computer. I don't know. I feel like that needs to be said every time.
That is all the news. There is nothing else that has happened.
No, not a thing?
Not a thing.
All right. Well, in that case, that is our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app. Be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or a nice like us. We need to know you're out there. So leave a review and tell all your friends, too. We also want to hear directly from you. So follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club, where my lovely wife, Dale, handles all the retweets and replies. Mm-hmm. So give her a holler. And you can email us at contact@nicegames.club. You can also give us feedback on the feedback form. Where can they find that, guys?
Nicegames.club/feedback.
That's right. We've got a couple recently, but we could always use more.
Yeah.
So let us know what we should do with this program.
Yes.
We do want topic suggestions too, right?
Yes. And some people have given us those. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Because, we can't have all the ideas on this program.
We want to give you the content you want to hear.
Yes. That's the spin. if you've got something you want to hear our take on or something that you want us to do a little research on, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, you can find out more about the show and your nice host, as well as all the links and notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. And so, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop.
Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.